I believe, dear reader, and these words come from the bottom of my heart, that I can truly trust you. Look at yourself. You've sought out my story. You're willing to hear me out through these many pages. Who but a worldly and curious soul would undertake such a journey? Why, already I discern in you the intellect and refinement of a person with an open heart and nimble mind. You and I, my new friend, will become well acquainted over the course of this tale. But you'll want me to proceed with the telling. That's what you've come for, and I'll not thwart your wishes a moment longer. So choose your favorite spot. A divan in a sumptuous hotel suite. The leather chair in front of your blazing fireplace. Or a sun-soaked bench in a sculpture garden. Any place, really, where we might enjoy the luxury of uninterrupted time together. And I will tell you the tale of the most dangerous woman in the world. Or so the Pinkertons dubbed me. Today was the first day of my trial in the booming metropolis of Menominee. I narrowed my attire choices down to an indigo dress or a modest black dress with fluted collar. Looking at the black dress, I thought, heavens, it's no funeral, and donned the blue one. It hugged my torso in a becoming manner, but still struck the serious and formal note required of the occasion. I kept my jewelry to a minimum, a simple sapphire necklace and matching earrings. The carved gold bracelet the Baron gave me on our first wedding anniversary, and my 3-stone diamond ring with garland filigrees. As much as I love my jewels, this was no time for ostentation. With the trial slated to open at 2 in the afternoon, my brothers and I enjoyed a leisurely luncheon at home. Then Paul drove us through swirling snow to the courthouse in his 1916 Apperson Jackrabbit. He's so proud of that car, with its spruce green exterior and leather seats as comfortable as a sofa. But then his automobile business does stock the latest models in the Upper Peninsula. I believe, Paul, I observed from the back seat, that Mr. Apperson has taught Henry Ford a thing or two with this car. Jean, who sat beside me, said, taught him how to build the most expensive thing on wheels is what he's done. I chuckled. Jean and I fell easily into the sport of teasing our older sibling, and added, now if only you could find a buyer for it in Menominee. Paul pivoted his blocky head in my direction. If I get the chance to sell it. I resented Paul's insinuation that he stood to lose property in the lawsuit. After Papa's passing, Paul had ordained himself head of the family, even though the best he'd ever managed was a lumber worker's salary. That is, until I financed his automobile business. In truth, the responsibility for substantial support of the family had always fallen to me. I reached over the front seat and patted Paul's shoulder. You needn't worry. Have I ever let you down?
You're coming damn close, said Paul.
Oh, don't make it harder than it already is, Jean said. None of us likes being dragged to court. I could always count on Jean to take my side whenever Paul goaded me. With a winking nod to Jean, I said, I'm sure it will all come out fine. Everyone should have a brother like Jean. He's as loyal as a musketeer, always ready to serve up merriment, and dashing to boot. Today he sported a trim, charcoal gray suit. Paul wore a baggy black jacket and shiny with wear wool pants. Jean, at 6'2", surpasses Paul in height and carries himself as erect as a proud stallion. Jean has the sort of looks that beguile women. Twinkly blue eyes, a shapely mustache, and tawny brown hair. Paul, stouter of build, and perpetually glum, has only managed to attract a dowdy wife who disdains the revelry Jean and I naturally fall into. How perfectly provident that Jean, and not Dull Paul, was named after our charming father.